Radio Prague News. The alleged kidnappers of five Czechs who went missing in Lebanon have linked their fate to terrorist suspects wanted in the United States. The Czech Republic will give over 6 million euros in aid to Syria in 2016, and a bomb scare halted Regiojet and Leo Express trains around the country on Monday. The alleged kidnappers of five Czechs who went missing in Lebanon last year have contacted the Czech authorities, warning them not to allow the extradition of three men wanted for terrorism to the United States. The news site Neovlivni.cz reported on Monday. According to the site, the kidnappers sent the Czech authorities an email saying, "Do not hand over our boys and your boys will be free." The intelligence services are reportedly checking the authenticity of the mail. The three men mentioned in it are Ali Fayyad, Fawzi Jaber and Khaled Marabi, arrested in Prague in 2014 on suspicion of terrorism after trying to sell weapons and cocaine to US agents who passed themselves off as members of a Colombian terrorist organization. In September, a Prague municipal court approved their extradition to the United States, where they could face life imprisonment. A final decision on their extradition now rests with Justice Minister Robert Pelikán. The Czech Republic will give over 6 million euros in aid to Syria in 2016, the CTK news agency reports, citing government sources. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka is to officially announce the sum at the Syria Donors Conference in London on Thursday. The objective of the international conference is to raise significant new funding for humanitarian efforts in Syria. The Czech Republic has earmarked 4.4 million euros for development aid and 1.6 million euros for humanitarian aid. The money should help finance the medical evacuation program Medevac, the EU's Madad Fund set up in response to the Syrian crisis, and the grant program New Elite for Syria. A nationwide search is on for two men who attacked and seriously injured a 41-year-old Syrian national in Prague over the weekend. The Syrian is hospitalized with stab wounds. According to the news site Lidovky.cz, the victim and his girlfriend are both actively engaged in helping migrants. According to her, the attack was preceded by a number of threats, including the swastika sprayed on their car. Rail transport was disrupted in many parts of the country on Monday after the two biggest private companies, Regiojet and Leo Express, got anonymous calls warning them of a bomb on one of their trains. Over 1,000 people were evacuated from their morning trains as explosives experts searched wagon by wagon. The operation is still underway. The hardest hit route was that between Prague and Ostrava. Finance Minister Andrei Babiš, who last week caused a stir by proposing to halve the tax on draft beer, has said he would not be opposed to reducing the VAT on non-alcoholic beverages and water from 21 to 10% as well. Mr. Babiš, who was accused of blatant populism by both opposition and coalition deputies, made the latest proposal in an interview for the Daily Bravo, saying that the VAT reduction on water would cost the state 15 million crowns, that on non-alcoholic beverages, 50 million. Commentators have linked his proposals to the autumn Senate and regional elections. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should be partly cloudy to overcast with scattered showers and day temperatures between 8 and 12 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, Foreign Minister is heading Czech delegation to Egypt to boost economic ties. The euro is back in the spotlight, and we have the latest Czech sports news. In one-on-one, we meet DJ and critic Jana Komanková, the woman behind a vibrant website focused on the Prague arts scene. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek, heading a Czech delegation, continued an official visit to Cairo on Monday. The meeting with ministers and other representatives is aimed at deepening bilateral relations and bolstering further economic cooperation, with an accent on security and defence. Jan Wellinger has the details.
A delegation of 23 business representatives to Egypt, headed by Foreign Minister Lubomir Zaoralek, is aiming to deepen economic and cultural ties with Egypt, one of the Czech Republic's most significant trading partners in the Middle East. The initiative is to improve relations, even though the country has seen marked political and social upheaval since the promise of the Arab Spring democracy evaporated. Bratislav Turecek is a specialist on the Middle East at Prague's Metropolitan University.
The former Czechoslovakia had very strong ties with Nasser's Egypt, a partner for major arms export, but also for cultural exchange. The Czechs enjoyed a good reputation, which still holds true today. At the same time, I think that politicians sometimes overstate the importance of past relations. A lot has changed over the last 30 years, and many of the ties with the Arab world no longer exist. The political and economic maps have changed.
The hope for the Czech delegation is to encourage new business opportunities, much of it in the area of security and defense.
Egypt is looking for competitive new products. What the Czech Republic can offer today are machine parts, transport systems and similar technology. As far as I know, a lot of work went into putting together by the Foreign Ministry a delegation representing these fields.
But with all the changes that have swept Egypt and other parts of the Middle East, there are clearly risks. Some question the stability of the Egyptian market, not least in the area of arms and defense. Bratislav Turecek again.
We can't pretend today that Egypt is a democracy. It's a semi-military regime with thousands of political prisoners behind bars. It is possible that European states will have to respect certain restrictions, not least regarding the sale of arms.
The emphasis of the foreign minister's visit, of course, is more than just economic, but also cultural, focusing, for example, on 55 years of Czech archaeological work in Cairo's Abusir, where they have enjoyed remarkable success over the years. Mr. Zaoralek has also emphasized the need for a solution in Syria. On Sunday, he met with members of the Syrian opposition in Cairo, agreeing that the utmost effort was needed to end violence in Syria so that refugees fleeing the conflict there could return home.
Jan Wellinger with that report. After a long time on the back burner, the question of euro adoption seems to be making a comeback in the Czech Republic. Champions of the idea are now pointing out that the country fulfills nearly all the criteria for joining the eurozone, and the timing could hardly be better. Chris Johnston has more.
Joining the euro has, for the past 5 years or so, been a leper-like subject in the Czech Republic. The euro crisis and Greece's interminable financial woes took the shine for most people off the concept, although the Czech Republic is committed to joining the euro camp at some time in the future. But what has remained a twinkle in the eyes for most euro enthusiasts, economists and businessmen could be back on the agenda again. That, at least, was the idea of a conference on euro adoption hosted by the Czech government last week. State Secretary of European Affairs Tomáš Prouza promised that the debate would be taken out of the heady hothouse atmosphere of Prague and into the regions. And the State Secretary gave the distinct impression that the Czech Republic should start looking at euro adoption very hard soon, or face the prospect in the near future of cooperation between the hardcore of eurozone countries deepening further and the Czech Republic being on the outside and not having much of a say on the speed and direction of the ever closer eurozone taking shape. With the financial, budgetary and banking rules surrounding the euro still a work in progress, that worry about an evolving and more distant and different eurozone represents a palpable concern. But the conference, which promised to discuss both the benefits and risks of euro adoption, also gave plenty of room to those warning against joining the eurozone. Those range from the current governor of the Czech National Bank, Miroslav Singer, to the head of the country's main confederation of trade unions, Josef Středula. Some, like Středula, say the real Czech economy, that is seen from the perspective of the relatively low average wages of most Czechs, is still way adrift of most of the prosperous euro core zone countries, and euro adoption for him is unthinkable. But former finance minister, now the rector of Škoda Auto University, Pavel Mertlik, says that as regards euro adoption, the progress on wealth catch-up is not so crucial. For him, the key fact is that the Czech Republic is significantly integrated in the same economic cycle as the biggest trading partner Germany and the other major euro users.
There is a conversion since 2014, but a short time before we had 7 years of real diversion, I can say. Now we are more or less on the level of 2008 as regards GDP per capita compared to the Eurozone. My key argument is that Eurozone is not uniform, and definitely it is not realistic to expect that all countries of the Eurozone will be of the same economic level. What is important is the cyclical behavior of the individual national economies, and they should be harmonized. And the Czech Republic already is deeply harmonized with the business cycle in the European Union.
The rector of Škoda Auto University, Pavel Mertlik, ending that report by Chris Johnston. And now I'm joined in the studio by Ian Willoughby with a summary of the latest Czech sports news.
We begin today with soccer, and the Czech national team captain Tomáš Rosický must feel really cursed. The 35-year-old received a standing ovation when he returned after a groin operation for his first appearance of the season for Arsenal, coming on as a 71st-minute substitute in an FA Cup game at the weekend. But the midfielder's bad luck continued when it was reported that he may have picked up a thigh injury during his brief appearance that could keep him out for 6 weeks or more. Now 35, Rosický has been plagued by injuries over the years and has appeared only 158 times for Arsenal since joining the club a decade ago. Czech fans must now be worrying that the midfield maestro will still be out for the European Championship in France. Staying with football, and as the transfer deadline approaches, Czech midfielder Adam Hlošek has left Stuttgart for Legia Warsaw. Another occasional Czech international who's never quite made the grade, striker Tomáš Pekárt, has moved from Ingolstadt to AEK Athens. Meanwhile, Sparta Prague's Radoslav Kovač says he will retire at the end of the season. The 36-year-old enjoyed spells at Spartak Moscow and West Ham and made 30 international appearances. Speed skater Martina Sablíková had a dream weekend. The 28-year-old won her first ever World Cup race in the 1500 metres in Norway's Stavanger. She also came first in the 3,000 metres, setting a new personal record. And to cap it all, she won the Long Track World Cup for the 10th time in a row, without even needing to compete in the last meeting of the season in March. Sablíková told journalists she was so overjoyed at her time in the 3,000 metres, she didn't at first register that she had the World Cup title in the bag. Tennis, and three Czechs made it to finals at the Australian Open, but all three left Melbourne empty-handed. Veteran Radek Štěpánek failed to pick up his second title at the Grand Slam tournament when he and Daniel Nestor were beaten by the UK-Brazilian duo of Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez. And Andrea Hlaváčková and Lucia Hradecká lost their doubles final to the Swiss-Indian pairing of Martina Hingis and Sanja Mirza. And the leading Czech singles players, Tomáš Berdych and Petra Kvitová, slipped in the world rankings after the Australian Open. After his exit in the quarterfinals, Berdych is now eighth in the world. Kvitová, who suffered a shock second-round defeat, has fallen to ninth. Finally, Czech star Jaromír Jágr captained an Atlantic Division selection in the final of the NHL All-Star Game against the Pacific Division. Jágr had scored in a semi-final match against the Metropolitan Division, but missed out on a share of the million-dollar prize pool as the Pacific Division All-Stars won Sunday's final 1-0. That's all the sports news for today.
Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Anybody in Prague who has taken an interest in alternative music in the last 2.5 decades will surely know the name of Jana Komanková, a leading radio host and music journalist. Today she runs a website dedicated to the city's culture scene, and she is Ian Willoughby's guest in this edition of One on One.
Jana Komanková runs Proti Šedí, which translates as Against the Grey, a highly useful one-stop website for anybody interested in arts events in Prague. She's been a well-known name in local alternative music circles since the early 1990s, as a DJ with Radio Jedna and a critic with numerous magazines and newspapers. Remarkably, the Prague-born Komanková began reviewing concerts for the mag Rock a Pop at the age of only 17. When we met at a cafe, I asked her how she'd managed to launch her career at such an early age.
I really wanted to be a music journalist. I thought it was the coolest job in the world. And the magazine that I was a reader of just asked the readers, you know, if you want to try writing, send us, you know, it was sort of a competition or something. So I thought, yeah, this is my chance, and I wrote a review and sent it in when I was 17, and they took it, and because they wanted new people, they hired me, and I started making more, and at the age of 18 I was the full-time employee, so I was also lucky. I was there when they were asking for new people.
I presume it was quite an education. I guess the other members of the editorial team were old guys with beards and long hair.
Yes, drinking a lot. So it was also fun, and I think it was nice to have a first job that was very much, you know, a hippie kind of thing. It was a lot of work, and they even acted quite surprised when I was asking, you know, how do you do these proofreading things, and, you know, because they went to the pub, and I was there, no, don't go to the pub, tell me how it's done. It was great for me because there was lots of freedom. When later on I was working for other magazines, I first realized that there are actually people who normally are much more strict about what you can write, how long should it be, etc., etc. I had a complete freedom in reviewing and, you know, doing things.
Also, I guess it must have been a very exciting period to write about music. There was so much going on.
Yes, and for me especially it was also about traveling to gigs abroad, because I love traveling. So, you know, packing things and going to Glastonbury was a dream thing. Every year I borrowed money from my parents, went to Glastonbury, and then gave the money back to them until spring when I borrowed more. So, or going to Berlin or Vienna for gigs. So it was not just gigs here, but also the possibility to see your favorite bands in England or Germany or Austria.
You've also been at Radio Jedna, the alternative music station, since 1993. What do you recall of your early days on the radio?
I was scared. And when I first heard the recordings, it was like, you know, scared little voice. And I was nervous, but it was beautiful. Of course, I was nervous because I was imagining all those people, you know, listening, and there were a lot of them. But I loved it from the first start, and I love it now.
And was Radio Jedna in those days also quite punky? It wasn't so long after it started as Radio Stalin, I guess.
Yeah. So the first years were a lot of crazy punk stuff, and later on it became a little bit more, you know, organized. But still, even now it's different. Even when, you know, the offices look like normal offices, and the studio is clean, and there's not too much crazy artworks everywhere. It's still like you play what you want, basically. So tomorrow I have a show, and it's like, you know, I can play any crazy 12-minute stuff from the newest, you know, whatever. So the spirit stayed, just a bit more clean now.
I was reading also that sometimes you broadcast at 6 a.m. I can kind of understand broadcasting at 2 a.m. because you keep going and then go into the studio. But how is it getting up? How do you get in the mood to DJ at 6 a.m.?
I actually stopped doing 6 a.m. shifts recently. And I have some other shifts that start at 9 a.m., which is normal. I did do it for a few years. But since I wasn't too healthy, because I had, you know, I went through cancer treatment and stuff, I was too tired after that.
Over the years, you've worked for loads of newspapers, loads of magazines, other media outlets. How do you think the work of a Czech music journalist has changed over that period?
It's changed a lot because I guess lots of people are now not very interested in, you know, reading record reviews. There are some, but I guess we have less working music journalists because there is not such a big demand, or you can read the stuff on blogs by people who are not paid for what they do. So there is less of people doing this, and if they work, like, you know, writing for newspapers about music, it's mostly about mainstream, and it's written from the lifestyle point of view, and, you know, scandals of singers, not too much, you know, music-focused articles. But the good things that it's quite easy to be published because you can be self-published. So if somebody has the need to, you know, communicate with people in this way, they can always have a blog or a Facebook page or whatever.
Why did you set up the website, the culture website, Protišedí?
Again, it was a nice coincidence. Before that, I was working for different media, and I didn't want to be just a music journalist anymore. And I was, you know, writing about the internet and other cultural things and stuff for various papers. And at one moment, I was finishing work at a music magazine that went bankrupt because it didn't have enough advertisement. And I met a friend who was very much into fashion and stuff. And he had these Facebook plans and stuff. And we met and talked. And he said, like, let's do something together because, you know, I have a Facebook page about fashion. And maybe we can have a web magazine. I was like, yeah, okay. I know how to do websites. I made some before. So we hit it off, and I kind of, you know, thought, so we have this fashion and we have this music and blah, 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 and started. And at that moment, I still thought that I would be looking for work in a, you know, paper or something, and this would be something for fun. But it kind of caught up, and we got some readers and we got some advertisers. So now it's like a normal working thing, which is lovely because I can use all the areas of what I know, and I can learn new things. And it's a good platform for people who are, you know, maybe 17 and now start writing. So it came full circle.
You mentioned that a few years ago you had cancer. At that time, you wrote a blog. Why did you choose to write about having cancer? You had breast cancer.
It was kind of obvious because I'm a bit extroverted person. And, you know, when I go to a concert and I dislike it, I write about it. And when I go to a pub, I dislike it, I write about it. So it was something I didn't even think, you know, should I or should I not? It was obvious. When the day I got the diagnosis, I was like, yeah, this will make a nice article. So it was obvious.
Several people have written that kind of blog over the years in different countries, and I understand that it's probably very helpful for many people. But also it strikes me that having a disease is a very private thing. You didn't mind sharing so much with the world?
I didn't. It was a bit surprising even for me, because I'm not the type that, you know, wears revealing clothes or normally talks about private things. But this was something that I felt was necessary to do, and it came naturally. It was, you know, surprising, and something in my way of thinking changed. I don't think that normally I would even write about buying underwear, and now I was writing about what's inside. So there are many things that surprised me about this whole journey, and this was one of them. But it happened, and I'm glad that it might be helpful for some.
Cancer is very hard to talk about. It's one of the worst things, if not the worst thing in the world, I think, for many people.
Not for me. It's just kind of easy for me to talk about it. I know that for some people it's hard, and I guess it's very individual. People are going through these things very differently. I saw many ways of people dealing with it, so it wasn't hard for me to talk about.
And I wanted to ask you if for other people it was hard, or if there's a way that people talk about cancer that maybe you found irritating or annoying or simply wrong, the general discourse about cancer.
Well, what irks me is always all those alternative things, because the people who are big fans of these are sometimes quite aggressive. It was one of the hardest things for me to the whole thing, because I wrote about it. I got tons of emails from people who were like, you know, stop doing these are poisons, you have to take cannabis oil and blah blah. And if I very politely told them, no, I chose this way and I believe that my doctor is okay, they would get quite aggressive, you know. And they are stupid, you will die. And there's lots of these people.
To finish on a more kind of positive note, you're super active, you're still very much on top of music, culture in general. But many people, when they get to a certain age, they kind of lose interest in music and culture in general. I guess in your case, there's no danger of that happening.
I guess so, but maybe it's also that I have more things now. I love, you know, being at home and drinking tea and knitting, so it's not just that I'm spending every evening in clubs to going to crazy concert. And, as you know, today I'm going to see Peter Hook, who is, I guess, 60 or something like that. On Monday, it's Leonardo from Sonic Youth, who's a gray-haired person. And I'm not spending that much time, you know, discovering new talent. Maybe if I go to a festival and then there's a new band playing, it's okay. And I love, you know, downloading music from, you know, band camps of bands and, you know, going to discussion forums where they share new music. But definitely as you get older, the lifestyle changes a bit. So it's not like as crazy as it was. But I still like, you know, new stuff. And I love, you know, new artists, not just in the music field. So I hope that this will stay that way.
Jana Komankova, a leading radio host and music journalist, was Ian Willoughby's guest for that edition of One on One, which brings us to the end of our programme here on Radio Prague. Just a reminder that all our programmes are available online at radio.cz, and you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franjková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.